Here in Hawaii, there's much that ties us to Asia Pacific. Part of that is geography, but it's also culture and economics.
Today, we're going to start an occasional segment that looks at some of those economic issues. We're calling it Trade Winds, and it's a project for our news director, Bill Dorman, who spent more than 10 years covering business news in Asia. And, Bill, we're starting out with a closer look at a few trade issues that have been set in motion by the Trump administration.
Yeah, a couple of very different trade stories in particular, the tariffs on steel and aluminum and trade with China. So I went to a very experienced voice to get a little perspective on this. Adam Posen is the president of the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, D.C. He's worked at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, the Bank of England. He's advised the Prime Minister of Japan on economic policy, and he currently advises the Congressional Budget Office. Smart guy, well-informed, talks to a lot of people. We started talking about how the Trump administration's trade policy is a major shift, really, for the United States, away from a multilateral, rules-based approach and in a direction that's kind of going it alone. The disputes on steel and aluminum and with China did not start with the case before the World Trade Organization. For the United States, that's a change.
The Trump administration has taken it on itself to just impose these tariffs without taking other countries to the WTO without waiting for the adjudication. I mean, it sounds a little excessive, but basically the U.S. is engaging in vigilante justice rather than waiting for the courts to process its complaints.
And within some of the details of steel and aluminum, for one, the tariffs, those are under a 1960s law about national security, and Brazil gets an exemption, and yet Japan does not. What does that say to you?
Oh, I think you've hit on exactly the right example. The national security exemption is a sham. Now, the way international law works, including WTO international trade law, is no international organization can tell an individual member country what defines its national security. So every rule in international law is a national security opt-out. But up till now, in trade for the last 70-plus years, the U.S. has basically kept itself from using the national security exception because they wanted to put peer pressure and, frankly, threat on everybody else. If you use this, yeah, legally you can get away with it, but then you'll make us very mad, and so please don't use this because then you can wreck everything. And so the Trump administration decided to violate this norm, which on the one hand opens up the floodgates for everybody else in the world to say, I don't want to have U.S. whiskey or Harley-Davidson motorbikes or American superhero films because they threaten my national security. But also, it's this bizarre thing where the Trump administration is putting tariffs on our military allies and then extracting economic promises from them in order to lift the tariffs, and which gives the lie to the whole national security aspect of this, because it was really national security, the fact that Brazil is not our ally would matter a great deal, or the fact that Europe was willing to give up some steel exports shouldn't matter. So it's just all a sham, frankly.
It's that whole idea of mixing national security and economics. And the theme of going it alone is a thread that continues through other elements of trade policy for the Trump administration as well.
And a lot of people think about China when it comes to trade policy. That idea of going it alone is part of the recent trade threats against China, including allegations of unfair treatment by China of American companies.
Yes, and, you know, that's a situation, Chris, that's faced not only by the United States. So Adam Posen, he's an economist who spent his career really working with multilateral groups with an international approach based, though, on the economic self-interest of all the countries involved. And for China, this is a real issue for the United States and for other countries as well. But striking out by ourselves really may not be the best approach to solving what truly is a complex problem.
American companies and other advanced economy companies wanting to sell in China, and China saying, we're not going to let you have access to our market and sell to Chinese people unless you give us some technology or unless you produce here, with the assumption being we will take some of the technology, copy some of the technology. And this is a bit tricky because it's not really a crime. It's just hard bargaining. And in fact, the U.S. has done that. U.S. multinationals have done that sort of thing to other countries, either in terms of suppliers or market access. But it has gotten very extensive and quite powerful, and so there is an argument to be made that the U.S. government has to step in, because no individual American company wants to be the one to bring a claim against China, either by making some sort of legal case, because then they'll get punished, or by withdrawing from the Chinese market, because then their competitors get all that. So there is a difficult problem to be dealt with. What you're raising, which is where I would come out, is just because a problem's serious doesn't mean lashing out is the right way to deal with it. So the U.S. unilaterally, meaning without allies, cutting off Chinese access to our markets and putting on various trade sanctions and unpleasantness, doesn't have a clear win for us. It just says, okay, if we make China miserable enough, they'll stop stealing, which is not quite true. It's not like somebody in Beijing can just throw a switch and say, stealing off now. It's okay, sorry, we're enforcing things. It's far more decentralized than that, and it's far more inherent to the commerce than that. So the way you got to work on it is you've got to get a bunch of countries together, all of whom have interest in this, because if we do this and then Germany or France or Japan just gains market share at U.S. expense, it doesn't really help anything. You got to get a bunch of countries together, and you got to put peer pressure and rules on China, make it in China's interest to change their whole way of dealing with technology.
And again, you hear that theme of working with the self-interest of other countries as well to help pressure China versus the United States going it alone.
Now, when people talk about trade, you think of the big container ships. And by the way, if you haven't seen that monster one in port here in Honolulu that's bound for China, it's a head-turner, so it's worth swinging by to take a look-see. But that's really only part of the trade story these days, and that's especially for Hawaii, isn't it?
That's true. It's true for the United States in general. The trade in goods is actually much less than the trade in services. And services, again, that includes so many businesses, and here in Hawaii, that includes tourism and foreign investment as well. Those two areas clearly pretty significant for the economy in Hawaii. And if there are threats of trade retaliation, for example, if China would cut back on tourist visas to the United States, we would definitely feel that here in Hawaii.
This is one of the things that, frankly, the Trump administration seems to pointedly get wrong, which is the U.S. is primarily a services economy, and some people, when they hear that, they think of McDonald's or health aides in hospitals and nursing homes, which is part of it. But it's also things like the global accounting firms, the global law firms, the consulting services provided by an IBM or a Hewlett-Packard Enterprise to other companies, the medical administration, which the U.S. is actually very good at outside the U.S. and sells to other governments around the world. Services are roughly 80% of the U.S. economy, and the rest is manufacturing and agriculture and mining. And they're an equally large part, maybe a little less share, but still the vast majority share of our exports. And in fact, some of our services are our most lucrative high-end products. Finally, some of what goes on between countries is when there are investments across borders, like Japan made a lot of investments in Hawaii and in the rest of the U.S., people will recall from the 80s and 90s. And when you make those kinds of investments, they actually tend to increase demand for our services because you get more associated with and networked into the U.S. economy. So there's a lot more at risk than simply we end up, they not taking their steel, they end up not taking our Harley-Davidson motorcycles, although that's bad enough.
And just last week, the South China Morning Post reported a former Chinese vice minister of commerce told state media there that China might consider curbing tourism to the United States if this dispute keeps escalating and comes to the point of retaliation.
Well, Bill, what can we expect from all this trade talk and these still simmering disputes? What indicators should we be looking for?
Yeah, right. Talk about a developing story. Yeah. So I asked that of our trade expert, so Dr. Adam Posen, president of the Peterson Institute for International Economics, and he started with China.
There's going to be a period where the Chinese government and the U.S. government are going to be seen to be bargaining. And it's possible that, as was the case with the exemptions you mentioned earlier for like Brazil on steel, that the Chinese government will offer something to the Trump administration, and the Trump administration will declare victory, and nothing really bad will happen. And that may well be the case, but I'm very worried that the Chinese government will offer the U.S. a bunch of stuff. The stuff will not be very satisfying. The Trump administration will take it and say thank you very much, and then go ahead and escalate further. So first thing I would worry about is going from a phony war to a real trade war with China 6 months, 9 months down the road. The second thing is just to watch for the very localized and industry-specific effects that trade battles have. So it's going to end up devastating, for example, the American pork industry, because the pork industry has, I think, it's a quarter of its production goes to exports, and about half of that goes to China. So, you know, that's a 15%, say, drop in the total sales of the pork industry. And the people in Hawaii certainly know there aren't a lot of farmers who have huge margins on which to live. So there will be direct effects. And the third thing to worry about, which goes back to your discussion of the broader points, is are we essentially delegitimating the U.S. in some spheres of international agreement? And that can sound like this sort of airy-fairy liberal fantasy, but it's actually very practical. If the U.S. becomes this very undependable trading partner that's sort of looking out for itself and flouting the rules and arbitrarily deciding, okay, Japan, no steel for you, Brazil, steel for you, China, we'll see. You know, that has a chilling effect on all kinds of economic relationships in the world and in the willingness to give the U.S. the benefit of the doubt. And so over the next couple of years, if the Trump administration stays with that kind of approach, we'll probably see some erosion in the U.S.'s world role, which actually has some direct economic costs as well.
And again, there's the potential for some of those costs to reach Hawaii. As he said, it's not just pig farmers and soybean farmers. Chinese participation is still a relatively small part of both tourism and investment in Hawaii. For example, on tourism, visitor numbers from China last year were about the same as those from Europe and about half the level, for example, of Australia. But in terms of growth, hospitality industry has big dreams for the China market. And if there are problems in the trade relationship with China, both tourism and investment could be vulnerable right here in Hawaii.
Bill, has this amounted to a kind of disruption of a balance that had been achieved at some cost over a lot of years? I mean, is this all being thrown up in the air all of a sudden?
It's definitely a different approach. One interesting indicator that you can look to is markets are very nervous about this in terms of just little blips of back and forth of yes, we will, no, we won't, oh, perhaps we might. You see an outsized reaction. That's another area where there's an impact for folks in their retirement plans as well or in the stock market.
So we might see a lot of hiccuping going forward.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Very insightful. Bill Dorman is HPR's news director and joins us this morning with a new segment on The Conversation highlighting economic issues in the Asia Pacific, a segment we're calling Trade Winds.